Hitfelt versus Citrion Systems.
May it please the court, my name is Christy Fix. With me at council table is Michael Subit, and we represent the appellant Niels Hitfelt. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
3 minutes, very well.
Yes, thank you. Okay. This is a contract dispute about Mr. Hitfelt's...
Let me ask you some questions. As you may know, we discussed this case and all the cases yesterday afternoon. As a point of clarification, what bonus... are you seeking? And the reason I'm asking that is the first quarter of 2012 is not at issue.
Correct.
My understanding is the next two quarters are not at issue because the thresholds weren't met.
Mm-hmm.
So am I safe in assuming that you're only talking about the fourth quarter bonus?
It's the fourth quarter and it's an annual bonus. So there's five components to the bonus, four quarters and an annual.
Okay.
Any further? Okay. So again, this case is about Mr. Hitfelt's entitlement to the success bonus that he earned, the annual and the fourth quarter success bonus that he earned during his employment with respondent Citrion Systems Americas. Mr. Hitfelt's employment agreement mandated payment of the success bonus provided that six enumerated terms and conditions were met, and none of those conditions required Mr. Hitfelt to remain employed through the end of 2012. Nevertheless, the Superior Court held as a matter of law that Mr. Hitfelt's entitlement to his bonus ended when his employment ended, and this is reversible error. So I plan to address two issues. The first is that the express language of the employment agreement makes it clear that SSA's payment of the success bonus was mandatory if the employer met certain company-wide financial targets. It does not condition the payment of the bonus on continued employment. And then the second is the extrinsic evidence issue. SSA has twisted the record to regarding the negotiations that led up to the execution of the agreement. The negotiations that SSA cites have nothing to do with the success bonus. They all relate to Mr. Hitfelt's request for a 12-month post-agreement tail that is consistent with a post-agreement tail that existed in a predecessor agreement between his prior company and Citrion's parent company. They had nothing to do with the 2012 success bonus. So the extrinsic evidence that SSA cites sheds no light on the success bonus that's at issue here.
Well, is your position we even need to get to the extrinsic evidence? I thought appellant was saying that the terms by itself were clear, so we don't get to the...
We do believe that the terms are clear. So the paragraph 2 of the agreement makes it clear that he is entitled. The language is mandatory. It says he will be receiving the success bonus. Bonus agreement makes it clear that all of the terms and conditions apply to the employer's performance targets, not to Mr. Hitfelt's targets. And so, yes, we do agree that that the agreement is clear. But to the extent the court does find ambiguities and does look toward extrinsic evidence, again, the extrinsic evidence applies to the negotiations of an entirely different term.
Let me ask you a question about one of the arguments that you're making. And that argument is, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, that this agreement, this employment agreement, was not terminated by virtue of his termination. Is that an argument that you're making?
It is. And what that has to do with is that, the terms of the agreement survive. So there's continuing obligations under paragraph 14 that provide that Mr. Hitfelt must continue to obey his duties of confidentiality, of non-disparagement, of non-solicitation. The obligations of Citrion to pay any vested payments continue. So, for example, it's obligation to continue to pay the promised success bonus and any obligations it might have had to pay reimbursements. Those continue. All that they terminated was his employment. And if you look throughout the employment agreement, you see that the terms all say this is termination of the employment, it's termination of the position, it's termination of the relationship. None of them talk about termination of the agreement.
Okay, but all that you're asking for here is compensation, or one of the elements of his compensation, the
yes.
bonus.
Yes.
You're not taking the position that he's entitled to base salary post-termination.
No, no. So base salary under paragraph 2 is
conditional. So let me ask you this.
Yes.
Paragraph 14, continuing mm-hmm. obligations, to which you just referred, says, notwithstanding the termination of employee for any reason, mm-hmm. the provisions of certain enumerated paragraphs will continue. None of those designated paragraphs include paragraph 2, the compensation paragraph. So how do you deal with that?
So paragraph 14 is it's a reminder to Mr. Bidfeld that he has to continue to obey his personal obligations under the agreement. It doesn't mention any SSA obligations. And we know that this is related to Mr. Bidfeld's obligations because we can look at paragraph 3, and I highlighted that on the contract that I gave you. So paragraph 3 is about reimbursement, and that paragraph says that SSA will reimburse Mr. Bidfeld for any reasonable business expenses that he incurs. If you were to interpret the contract the way that SSA wants us to interpret it, or interpret paragraph 14 that way, that would mean that Mr. Bidfeld could incur a substantial business expense the day before his termination, would be terminated, and then SSA would have no obligation to pay that back. And that can't be the correct answer here. So just as paragraph 14 doesn't include paragraph 2, it also doesn't include paragraph 3. But yet, that obligation to pay Mr. Bidfeld continues.
If we get to the mm-hmm. extrinsic evidence argument, isn't that evidence that Mr. Bidfeld understood that if he was terminated his employment, he didn't get a bonus? You're just saying that that's the wrong way to read that statement?
That's correct. The extrinsic evidence that SSA discusses all relates to this request for a 12-month post-agreement tail compensation consistent with what he had had in his prior compensation agreement. So, you know, again, you know, if there's competing inferences to be drawn from the evidence, then the question of contract interpretation is for the trier of fact. And so here, even, you know, a jury could reasonably believe that all of those contract negotiations related only to the 12-month post-agreement tail and didn't relate to the success bonus. There's no evidence of any discussions about the success bonus and whether Mr. Bidfeld would remain entitled to that if Citrion terminated his employment. Okay. I see my time is up.
Okay. You have your rebuttal.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, Amy Hartman and my co-counsel Peter Altman on behalf of the respondent Citrion Systems America. There is an expression that my parents have used with me, I used with my children, and perhaps the Rolling Stones used it best. You can't always get what you want. It is very clear in this case.
Well, you can sometimes get what you need.
Very true, Your Honor.
How fair is it to deny him the bonus? I mean, isn't it? You're just saying that reading it to the very strict letter of the law, even though the bonus may have been earned because he was gone, he had no entitlement to it. Is that?
No, that's not correct, Your Honor. What we are saying is that under the four corners of the contract, the way that it was drafted, it's completely unambiguous as to what was required, and that the compensation that was owed to Mr. Hittifeld was paid, and it was timely paid. If you take the plaintiff's argument, they're talking about termination in September and that the contract and the obligation of the success bonus continued. But take that back. What if he was terminated February 2nd or March 2nd or April 2nd or even January 31st? Under their interpretation of the language, because it does not absolutely require that he be there to win, so to speak, that if they had terminated him literally 2 weeks later, he could have sat back in his chair at home and waited to see what happened.
How about if he was terminated the second day of the fourth quarter? Has he earned the fourth quarter bonus?
Well, under the terms of the agreement, he has not earned the fourth quarter obligation, but there might be an argument that there should be a prorated share under fairness or under wage law, but that's not what we have here. We have a contractual agreement that was heavily negotiated between the parties, so let's not forget that. The complainant says that there was not equal bargaining powers and that Mr. Hittifeld was not an active participant in the negotiations. But that's actually, they claim that in their opening brief at page 12. But nothing could be farther from the truth. In fact, he was an active participant in the negotiations of the termination of his prior relationship, active participant in these negotiations. He claims and puts himself out as being the de facto CEO of the organization. If you look at the duties and responsibilities under the employment agreement itself, he had responsibilities for every aspect of the North American operations of the company. So it was critical for him to be there in order to have the company achieve these elements and for the success bonus to be paid.
It seems to me that looking at paragraph 2, compensation, there are two elements, and they don't appear to be severable for purposes of the obligation for the employer to continue paying them. So if there's a claim that somehow the bonuses are due, it would seem to follow that so is base compensation. Does that make sense?
Yes, and we argue that in our brief, that their position makes no sense, that their position that he concedes that he's no longer entitled to continued base compensation, but somehow he's entitled to the success bonus no matter when his employment is terminated throughout the remainder of 2012 and potentially into 2013, because they argue that his employment contract never ended. Under their interpretation of the contract to date, when did it end? What did we have to do as the employer to terminate his employment contract versus his employment? It's a distinction without a difference, and there's no rational basis for making that distinction either in the agreement or in the case law that's cited. So when we have a situation where the four corners of the contract are not ambiguous, it's completely appropriate that as a matter of law, the lower court looked at the case law and the contract and interpreted the contract law and concluded as a matter of law that summary judgment was appropriate, and that's what happened in this case. If you get to the extrinsic evidence, which I actually think under the Berg case and its progeny is completely appropriate to look at the extrinsic evidence in order to support the interpretation of the contract and the negotiating history between the parties, we're not asking the court and we're not using the extrinsic evidence to add terms, alter terms, or modify terms. We're using the extrinsic evidence exactly as the Berg court and its progeny wanted us to use that extrinsic evidence to give the court a full opportunity to give full meaning to the parties. And here, the full meaning could not be more clear. I must disagree with counsel's argument that the discussion regarding the post-tail compensation was only about 12-month post-termination compensation. That is not what the email record demonstrates. It demonstrates clear back and forth between Mr. Hittifeld and Mr. Kraft about incentive compensation under the employment agreement.
Another way to say that, because they're saying this is summary judgment motion, you've got to draw inferences in favor of Mr. Hittifeld, and you're saying there's no possible inference to be drawn?
There is no possible inference to be drawn. If you look at the negotiating back and forth between the parties, at CR 37 and 38, Mr. Hittifeld himself did an entire two-page spreadsheet comparing the provisions of the employment agreement with the other agreements that he was negotiating at the same time relating to the conclusion of the German relationship. He did an entire two-page spreadsheet, and the company comes back at CR 41 and 42 and gives him a detailed response and says, you're not getting this. You need to understand, if you leave, this ends, referring to any incentive, post-termination incentive compensation. He goes on, Mr. Kraft goes on to say, this is how we've treated other employees and this is standard. It's clear that Mr. Kraft is not talking about post-tail termination that's unique to the German contracts. What he's talking about is the success bonus. What both parties are talking about is the success bonus, which is only earned if Mr. Hittifeld is in the chair as de facto CEO of the company, shepherding in through shepherding the sales through the organization. So there is no ambiguity, and there's no other alternative way to rationally read the contract. And if you look at Dice versus City of Montesano, a contract is not ambiguous simply because parties suggest opposite meanings. And that's exactly what we have here. The parties may be suggesting different meanings, but that does not create an ambiguity where none exists. So we would submit to the court that the trial court below, it's unfortunate, even though it's de novo, it's unfortunate that the decision and the oral argument was not preserved by the trial court. There was a malfunction of the recording equipment, but the trial court from the bench made a ruling that was clear and definite and addressed all of these different issues that are being raised on appeal. So there is no rational basis for overturning the trial court's decision. And finally, as to the issue with respect to the wage claim, there clearly is a bona fide dispute here as to whether or not these bonus payments were due and owing, and so there is no viable course of action with respect to their claim that they are entitled to a trial on the double damages issue. And if there are no other...
Who was the judge that granted the motion?
Judge Spearman.
Spearman, sorry. If there are no other questions, thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
I'd like to address just a few of counsel's arguments in her presentation. First, there was the issue about paragraph 2 and whether Judge Cox had asked if the base compensation was tied to the success bonus. But if you look at the language...
No, I didn't say it was tied. I'm just saying it's in the same paragraph.
It's in the
two
same
different types of compensation.
Correct,
and
yes.
It seemed to me that if one is being claimed, why isn't the other? And clearly you're not claiming that base compensation is due post-termination.
Correct, and that's because the base compensation is for services rendered. And once Mr. Vidfeldt's employment was terminated, he was no longer rendering services. And so his entitlement to base compensation ended. However, his entitlement to success bonus continued because it was not contingent on his providing services or remaining employed. Counsel had also talked about that there's no possible inference that could be made in our client's favor based on the extrinsic evidence. But, contract interpretation is a matter of law, only if it doesn't turn on the credibility of extrinsic evidence, or only if it doesn't turn on a choice of reasonable inferences to be drawn from the extrinsic evidence. And here, the negotiations between the parties on CP 37, the table, he points out that he's asking for a 12-month post-agreement tail consistent with what he had in the cooperation agreement. This whole table compares his prior agreement with the parent company to the current agreement with SSA. And his request is for 12 months of post-agreement tail, and he argues that it should be substantially the same as what he had in his cooperation agreement. On CP 41, that is Mr. Kraft's response to that table. And it's under the section for post-agreement tail compensation. Mr. Kraft says that, there is no intent to add a post-agreement tail if you leave, this ends. Again, the statement is in response to the request for a post-agreement tail. It has nothing to do with any conversation about a success bonus. And so based on that extrinsic evidence, a jury could find that, there wasn't a meeting of their minds. There wasn't a mutual understanding about the entitlement to the success bonus ending with the end of Mr. Vidfeldt's employment. So in sum, the extrinsic evidence read in the light most favorable to plaintiff, a reasonable jury could easily find that Mr. Vidfeldt is entitled to the success bonus. And Mr. Vidfeldt respectfully asks that the court reverse the Superior Court's grant of summary judgment and remand this case for trial. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The last matter.